on weeknights from 6
on 2FM.
And a very good evening from Damien O'Mara. You are most welcome to the Thursday edition of Game On. Busy programme to come between now and 7 o'clock. We will shortly be to Tallaght Stadium in advance of a big night for Shamrock Rovers in the Europa Conference League. News on that to come. Will reflect as well on the confirmation last night from the FAI that Eileen Gleeson's tenure as the Republic of Ireland women's head coach is over. And news as well within the past hour of the FAI creating what is effectively a third tier in the League of Ireland, a new National League competition. The recruitment drive is on for 20 teams, which will effectively bridge the gap between the amateur game and the League of Ireland game in many ways. All of that to come from a soccer perspective. Michael Corcoran and Bernard Jackman will be with us to reflect on the Champions Cup weekend gone by and what to expect from the weekend to come. And as it is Thursday, we will finish the programme by crossing the Atlantic to chat to Shep about all things relating to US sport. Plenty to come. Hope you can stay with us. Our text number, as always, is 51552. You can find us as well on social media at GameOn2FM.
Game on 2FM.
So it's nice to have your company. Hope you can stay with us, whatever it is you're up to. The 12th of December, presumably at this stage, the panic buying for Christmas has begun. So if you're stuck in a queue into a car park or you're walking along Grafton Street wondering what to buy your Auntie Mary, hopefully we can keep you entertained between now and 7 o'clock. Busy day of sport. As mentioned, the Football Association of Ireland has a short time ago confirmed it's to seek to recruit 20 teams for a new league, which will act as a direct connection between grassroots football and the professional game for the first time in Ireland. We will chat to Tony O'Donoghue and Conan Byrne about that and much more in a couple of minutes' time. We have a busy evening ahead for Shamrock Rovers. Plenty on that. Champions Cup rugby to come this weekend. Munster have made 6 changes to the side from that which beat Stade Francais last weekend in advance of their visit to Cast tomorrow night. Dave Kilcoyne and Ollie Yeager are back in the squad. Tighe Byrne, Niall Scannell, Stephen Archer, John Hodnett, Brian Gleeson and Mike Haley all come in to the side. So a busy night in store. Plenty of changes from a Munster perspective in advance of that tomorrow evening. And the other story today, which is broken, and I think an awful lot of Irish sports fans would have been captivated or taken on a fantastic journey by Eddie Jordan back in the 90s, 1991 to 2004, with the Jordan Formula One team. Eddie, who would be a fairly regular contributor to programmes across this radio station over the last couple of years, has confirmed today that he's been diagnosed with what he's described himself as an aggressive form of cancer. He's told this in an interview with the Formula for Success podcast, which he co-hosts with David Coulthard. So to Eddie, from Irish sports fans, no doubt, and from the many people in this organisation who've had great dealings with him over the course of the year, we wish him well with that journey to come. So listen, no better man than Eddie Jordan to take on these things. So much to come between now and 7 o'clock. We're going to begin though with soccer. Massive night in store at Tallaght Stadium. Shamrock Rovers on the verge of securing their advancement to the knockout stages of the Europa Conference League. We're going to chat about that initially. Our soccer correspondent Tony O'Donoghue joins us. Tony, how are you?
I'm very well, thank you. Enjoying Talla, and it's not as cold as I thought it was going to be.
No, listen, but you see, the old dog for the hard road. You know, how many layers do you have on you, Tony?
About 40 at the moment.
Yeah, you see, you need it, you know. And you know what? Listen, you know, people, like, it's the greatest pleasure of this job is that we get to see great moments, you know, up close and personal, and we get to bring great stories of Irish success and everything else to listeners and viewers. But when you walk out of the house and you've, like, 2 fleeces, the big coat, the hat, the jacket and everything else, and people look at you as if you're nuts, only us know the suffering.
Vests, long johns, all the cotton and the wool. Yeah.
Have you gone for the USB heated gilet yet?
Not yet, no. See, and some of my colleagues said to me that this was the game changer as far as winter sports are concerned.
I'm yet to get my one, Tony, but if anyone's out there wants to send me and Tony one, I'd be extra large. Tony probably squeezes
You're
into
shameless,
a large.
Damien.
No,
shameless.
Listen, this is the most middle-aged conversation you and I have ever had. Conan Byrne, how are you?
Oh, now, lads.
Yeah, sorry. What size gilet now would you? No, listen. We in this new era in RTE, we are not accepting free gilets from anybody. Tony, put it into context for people what potentially is at store at Tallaght tonight, because it is, we hope, the dawn of a new era for League of Ireland football yet again.
Well, I hope, going on what Stephen Bradley said yesterday, that the focus for the players and the fans will be more on glory than on money. Now, money is hugely important, particularly perhaps this week for Shamrock Rovers with an AGM that could perhaps be contentious. There's been the sort of a hint of a split in the boardroom among the members, perhaps, and among the major shareholders. And there's been talk of during the season that, you know, there's been a little bit of upheaval. Not everybody aligned together as Stephen Bradley would have liked them to be. But as he spoke yesterday, the game is about making memories for all the fans who've turned up, who've also travelled to the games. I mean, so far, the Hoops have drawn with Cypriot champions Apoel. They went to Belfast and beat Larne. They beat TNS here. And then they had a wonderful draw away to Rapid Vienna, who were a team ranked way ahead of them and at different leagues in terms of resources, in terms of income. So they've really had a tremendous campaign so far, and they've ensured already that they'll be playing in Europe after Christmas. So a win tonight and 11 points on the board, that could mean automatic qualification for the round of 16 and even more prize money. But on a day when the World Cup was officially awarded to Saudi Arabia, I thought it was wonderful to hear Stephen Bradley say, memories, making your dreams come true for the fans, for the players. They'll be talking about these nights and these moments for the rest of their careers and to their children. And that's what the game ultimately should be about. We grow up loving the game, thinking about, you know, the fantasies of playing ourselves or our team going on and doing extraordinary things. And this Shamrock Rovers team this season, despite not retaining their title and making history with a fifth consecutive league title, they have done extraordinary things. And of course, if they get a result tonight, well, then their last game of the league phase is next week in Stamford Bridge against Chelsea. And I suppose that is the glamour tie. There's like 3,500 Shamrock Rovers fans officially going over to that one. It'll end the calendar year in a high. But to know that they're playing football again after Christmas and with the possibility of being in, you know, the last 16, more money to come as well. But I think it's really important to stress they brought glory on themselves, on their league and on the country.
Mm. And Conan, just to contextualise it for people, 4 games played, 2 wins, 2 draws. They're one of only 6 teams who are unbeaten in the Conference League, and the other teams included are Chelsea, who are 5-5, Legia Warsaw, who are on course to make it 5-5, Rapid Vienna, all teams that you would associate with the Champions League or the Europa League. So in footballing terms, for a club that's now out of season, like this is a sterling campaign.
Yeah, I was just about to say that, Damien, in terms of a club that is out of season. We changed our schedule in order for us to kind of do well in Europe in those summer months to get to these stages of the competition. And it's now where you'd think that maybe we would go on a decline of results when you're out of season, but it hasn't happened for Shamrock Rovers. They've been absolutely superb. And I suppose the game against Rapid Vienna epitomises what they've been all about. Just the character shown within the squad and Johnny Kenny getting another goal to equalise against Rapid Vienna and holding on for that unbelievable 1-1 draw in Austria. It was a huge result, but take nothing away from the result of what's going to happen this evening. They're up against a very good Bosnian team in Banja Luka, and I suppose when people are probably listening on who are they, like they are a very, very good side, and just to probably contextualise them in terms of how good they are, they've beaten LASK from Austria 2-1 in the last round, albeit LASK had a man sent off in the 6th minute. They've beaten Apoel in Cyprus 1-0, where Shamrock Rovers only managed a last-minute equaliser against them at home. And they drew with Panathinaikos as well. Now, I think in order to give optimism to Shamrock Rovers, Viking or Reykjavik bet them 2-0 last month. And that was the team that Shamrock Rovers defeated in the Champions League playoff round this year. So there is cause of optimism in terms of going out and putting on another unbeaten game for Shamrock Rovers. And I think they deserve it, considering how well they've done in European competition, not just this year, Damien, but in the last number of years.
And Conan, just from a footballer's perspective and Stephen Bradley's perspective, like Tony's touched on it there, they're 13th in the league table at the moment, which would guarantee them a playoff to advance to the latter stages. If they can get into the top 8, they bypass, you know, a two-legged tie. Like, how important is it for Stephen Bradley and the strength and conditioning staff at Rovers that they can push on into that top 8 and, you know, give themselves some bit of leeway in the new year?
Yeah, it's a huge challenge, Damien. Like, when you're not playing regular football on a consistent week-to-week basis, it's going to be very hard. They did have HJK from Finland over for a friendly last month as well. but you can only play so many games in-house and try and get up to speed to that match fitness. So that's where I think that they might suffer a little bit. But like you said, it's the strength and conditioning that is going to hold the key here in order for them to perform at their optimum level. And
I'd be interested to hear Conan's view, actually, though, on whether a two-legged playoff would be better for them in terms of strength and conditioning. The fact that they won't have any week-to-week league games, rather than, yes, if they go straight through and the money will be better, but would the games be better also in terms of continuing the buzz here around Tala and getting more people to the games?
I think you're just trying to create history here, Tony. I think it'd be great for them to get into those rounds and playing against the top teams. And what would that do for domestic football here in Ireland? Maybe Stephen Bradley would like that two-legged tie. Maybe not. I think knowing Stephen and how high his expectations are of Shamrock Rovers, he'd want to get into that top eight straight away and play off against those really big sides in that last 16. And what a way to do it in terms of like the way Shamrock Rovers have won the four in a row, obviously missed out on that five in a row by Shelburne scoring that goal in the Brandywell with 10 minutes to play. But going on and competing at the top end of European conference football, it's massive for Shamrock Rovers, but it's massive for domestic football here in Ireland. And you hear about, you see the kids on the streets now talking League of Ireland, wearing League of Ireland jerseys, and for them to play in the latter stages of a European competition is just huge. And I think that would be the target, to get into that top eight and got automatic qualification.
And Tony, like Stephen Bradley, from my experience and no doubt from yours as well, he's always very honest about these situations. And like he seemed to be remarkably confident yesterday from what work they had done that this is a tie that they can look to secure a third win in five games from.
Yeah, and you know, I did say to him yesterday that, you know, form, you can't necessarily turn it on and off like a tap. But as far as Rovers are concerned, they do have form coming into this. As you mentioned, they're unbeaten, and he feels that the players, they had to give them a bit of a break, but they've come back chomping at the bit, really. He did mention Aaron McAniff and Rory Gaffney are out. They were hoping that maybe they might be back, but he's going to wait till January for them. Danny Mandroyu, Graham Burke, Aaron Green, all back training. Whether they'll be in contention for a place tonight, we'll have to wait and see. We're expecting the team before 7 o'clock, so hopefully we'll get it to you before that, an 8 o'clock kickoff here this evening. And yeah, he was bullish, and he is right to be. You know, the experience that they've gained in Europe, that know-how, knowing how to kill a game, knowing how to change the tempo of a game, knowing when you're in trouble, maybe for the goalkeeper Leon Poles to go down, and you know, those tactical timeouts that have become a part of the game now. That's just part of gamesmanship, if you like, but part of experience. That's part of how you learn in the trade and how you progress.
Tony, a potential tonight, would it be fair to say that maybe the last time home fans might see Neil Ferrugia, if there's a deal done in the January window, like Johnny Kenny's future, I think, yet to be secured as well, that there's a couple of players there who've been fantastic servants for this club that potentially the 7,000 crowd in Tala might be bidding farewell to tonight, which again is the price of success as well.
The last time I checked, they were telling me 8,000, so that's even better news. The contracts with players, I mean, Ferrugia has been outstanding for them, and he's the one that we often thought will be the next to make the step up. And Johnny Kenny, we can see his form. Now, Johnny Kenny is a Celtic player, and that's the thing. Shamrock Rovers will play, obviously, in this competition in Europe early next year. But whether Johnny Kenny will be a part of that, well, that remains to be seen, whether he's going to be coming back with the hoop. So as far as Ferrugia is concerned, well, you know, maybe the contract situation has a lot to do with what I referred to earlier on, some of the issues at Rovers. Stephen Bradley did say that he would explain that not everything was right this season, and maybe players like Ferrugia should have been tied down before now, because the longer that we wait and the better he performs tonight, for example, well, then probably the price on his head will go up.
Conan, on that, like Tony's alluded to the AGM, which is coming up, you know, there was articles in a couple of the papers over the weekend suggesting the release of documents here and there, and are one side trying to undermine the other side. Does that filter into a dressing room, or can difficulties exist at executive level which doesn't filter down to the training ground?
Just in terms of my experience, obviously I've been at a number of clubs that have been at the wrong end of it in terms of like financial reasons, but because the financial stability at Shamrock Rovers is particularly strong, at the end of this season, wouldn't have been very great at the start of the season, considering where they would have gone in Europe. Like, if they hadn't have gone on this run, Shamrock Rovers were in a bit of trouble financially. But the fact that they have that, they've gained €5 million over the last number of, with their European run, I don't think that the boardroom level will affect, will seep down into that dressing room in terms of that disharmony that is that Stephen Bradley is talking about in terms of the split. I don't think it would. I think the concentration and the focus is too much now on this European campaign and to try and get a good result this evening and to put their best foot forward to playing as long as they can in Europe for next season, because players can be very selfish, Damien, you know, in terms of their own finances, absolutely, but also in their own careers. Mm. And if they'll try and perform to the best of their ability in the hope of going on to the next level, like Neil Ferrugia, like Johnny Kenny, like Graham Bourke, there's loads of players there that will be in the shop window, and they'll be wanting to put on a show for potential suitors that might be interested in them. So I don't think this type of scenario will affect the dressing room too much.
Okay, Tony, just to finish, and I know details on this are yet to be fully released, but the FAI announcing a recruitment drive for 20 clubs to take part in an FAI National League, going to be split north, south, and then the teams going into playoffs to eventually win the league, and the winner to be promoted to the first division of the League of Ireland, and then ultimately a team relegated from the first division down into the National League. So this effectively is a way of trying to bridge the grassroots game, the likes of, say, a Leinster Senior League, and build that pathway through to League of Ireland Premier Division football.
Yeah, because we were an outlier as far as Europe was concerned in not having a football pyramid. I mean, there's been a lot of issues in Irish football, not least because we're not joined up. There isn't been joined up thinking, different leagues. We saw the vote last week for, I suppose, what you might call in a shorthand way, summer soccer. But just again, to align all the different clubs and all the different counties and all the different leagues together. This has all been part of the Mark Hannum's football pathways plan, and that's trying to just improve the game from grassroots all the way up to professional level. So this is another kind of another brick in the wall, another part of the plan. 20 teams, two divisions, one national league, they say, to be integrated. Now, north and south will be interesting. It'll be interesting to see, you know, they're looking for expressions of interest from clubs. Now, we know the likes of Mayo have already expressed an interest. Kerry came into the league recently, and it's great to see more regional clubs. And maybe we'll see more university clubs as well, because, you know, obviously a lot of footballers are looking for their education. We see what UCD have done in the past. But I think it can only be a good thing. It'll be interesting to see how long it takes. And, of course, the cost as well. Now, the fact that it's regionalised to north and south might at least help in the transport costs, etc. But yeah, it gives progressive clubs with an eye to progressing and to being the best they can be an opportunity to get involved in football and maybe go from, you know, the very end, the very bottom rung of the ladder all the way to the Premier Division and into Europe.
Okay, listen, we'll wait and see how it plays out. Tony, you're going to stay with us if that's okay. Conan, we'll bid you farewell. Thanks so much for being with us as always. Conan Byrne there. Tony's going to stay with us. We're going to chat about Eileen Gleeson on the far side of this break. Bear with us.
Game on 2FM.
And you're very welcome back to the programme. We are going to continue with soccer. Tony is still with us from Talla. Rebecca Cray joins us as well. Rebecca, how are you?
I'm good, Damien. How are you?
Not too bad. Thanks for being with us. Eileen Gleeson's reign as Republic of Ireland's head coach ending last night, the FAI confirming that she wouldn't be offered a contract extension. Tony, is the only surprise really in this the fact that the FAI acted so swiftly?
I think it was inevitable, and so why put her out of her misery? Why not put her out of her misery, I suppose, I should say, because she was miserable and we were all miserable after missing out on the chance of the Euros next summer. And it's a terrible blow. We knew from a long time ago that we were going to have a playoff. The game against Georgia was, you know, it was a gimme, really. It just had to be overcome. And so Wales or Slovakia were going to be the opponents. in a way, I'm kind of sorry it wasn't Slovakia now, because I think Wales did a number on us. They had beaten us in Tala here last February, and their new manager, Rhiann Wilkinson, just watched that one from the stands, and then she said about making Wales a more difficult team to beat, making Wales a team that reminded us of Ireland as we qualified for our first major tournament, the World Cup. And I think we were outthought and outfoxed, and I think in our heads as well, I think we let that game became too big for us. So, you know, Eileen had one job, and that was to get us to the Euros, if you like. Look, the great results that we got when she came in as interim. And remember, she said she didn't want to the main gig. She wasn't interested when she was asked time and time again. But then we proved in League B that we're better than a lot of teams in League B, 6 wins. And I give Eileen great credit for taking over the squad when post-World Cup, post-Vera Pau, there was clearly some issues, some rancour. Diane Caldwell, for example, saying that they had gotten to the World Cup despite Vera Pau, not because of her. So that was a difficult environment to come into and to negotiate. And I think straight away she put her own stamp on things. She set up her own team with the likes of Emma Byrne and Colin Healy, bringing Tyler Tolan back into the fold straight away. She was her own woman, certainly, and she deserves great credit for getting the gang back on track and those early results. But League A proved to be, you know, a very, very difficult, particularly the League A that we got when we got England, France and Sweden, which was so difficult. So a highlight, of course, was beating France in Parc y Cuive, playing in Parc y Cuive, playing in the Aviva Stadium. These are all pluses. But ultimately, for the aim of the job was to get us to our second championships, getting us to the Eurofinals for the very first time. Wales was a team that were ranked better than that we should really. All the resources that have been given to this squad over time, all the time we had to prepare Wales, and unfortunately we came up short. And, you know, if you want to be judged equally, you have to be, I suppose, criticised harshly as well. That was a job that the girls were meant to do, and Vera was meant to steer us to the European Championship Finals. It didn't happen. Now it leaves us in the situation where she can't go back to the job of head of women and girls sport. Hannah Dingley was appointed in April. The talk is that she did negotiate a clause in the contract when she was made permanent manager to return to a staff position within the FAI. That's what we're hearing she's going to be. But that's a bit difficult, because when you are no longer the manager, you don't hang around often, because that makes it difficult for whoever's coming in next. But yeah, I mean, she did some great things. She took over at a difficult time for the squad, but ultimately you're judged on results, and we didn't make it to the Euros. We're all gutted, as she is herself, I'm sure. But now it's time to get a new direction, a new departure, and a new coach.
Rebecca, like Tony summed it up brilliantly there, that, you know, she came in and steadied the ship at a difficult time, but it's difficult to make a case to say we're a stronger unit than the one that left Australia after the World Cup was.
Yeah, I obviously can echo a majority of that. You know, she did bring in that kind of level of, I suppose you can call it, enjoyment to the group again. You know, she kind of rejuvenated certain players, and obviously bringing Tyler Tolan back in, you could see Leanne Kiernan had a smile on her face again. She was enjoying her football. Obviously, that came from domestic side of things as well. But, you know, I think looking at the atmosphere that, you know, she gathered over time, and I think she had a good level of self-awareness in her, you know, bringing the team in that she brought around her, obviously with Eva Casagrande coming in at the strength conditioning coach there, with Colin Healy obviously coming in as coach, and Emma Byrne as well. So, you know, she knew her own strengths. She also knew her weaknesses, I suppose, as well, that she was able to rely on great professionals around her. So, yeah, look, as Tony obviously said, the results are the ones that matter. She did well in the Nations B, obviously bringing us through those wins. And obviously there was some good performances, you know, in the England, Sweden and France games. But ultimately, you know, just didn't get us over the line in the end.
I'm looking at the squad, or, like, you know, to look through the programme from the Wales game, Rebecca, you look at like Anna Patton, Leanne Kiernan, Heather Payne, Izzy Atkinson, Tyler Tolan, Jessie Stapleton, Abby Lark, and all 25 are younger. Like, there's a really strong squad there going forward. Now, okay, there's obviously your Niamh Fahies and Diane Caldwells and other players who've had great service for Ireland, but you would imagine this will be quite an attractive job.
You'd like to hope so, yeah. You know, like, she obviously did show good faith in the likes of Abby, bringing her into certain games, Izzy Atkinson as well, and obviously Jessie Stapleton has, you know, become a little bit of a staple in her squad in recent times as well. So, you'd like to think, you know, whoever's going to take over the reins will be chomping at the bit to get involved. You know, obviously you did mention the veterans, let's just say, in the likes of Niamh Fahey, Diane Caldwell, Louise Quinn. Who knows what lies ahead for them? Will it be someone that'll come in and just, you know, completely rejig the selection process, you know, look to maybe air domestic league here, or, you know, that younger group that we have? And yeah, look, it's going to be a complete, you know, change of the guard. I think we're going to see a complete shake up from whoever comes in. And I think it probably goes back to, you know, the pathway to where we're, you know, or the strategy, I suppose, and where we're going, what Mark Hannum has up his sleeve, you know, that's going to be released in the new year, hopefully, to see where Hannah Dingley is planning to take us. You know, so I think that will all be coming into play, obviously, with the new coach that they I think personally probably know who they have lined up already.
Do you think it's a short enough field, Tony? Like, you know, Colin Healy, I think, would be the name from the existing setup that would jump out in terms of the experience he has and the popularity he seems to have with the players. But, you know, the FAI kind of have promised, as associations always do, that they'll start this thorough recruitment process straight away.
Well, they'd kind of want to hurry up, wouldn't they? Because we have a game in February, back to the Nations League B, and we're playing Turkey on the 21st of February, and then we've games against Slovenia and Greece. We're back to a level that we think we should be winning matches, but still you'd want to, you know, get your ducks in a row in that regard. Colin Healy, highly regarded as a coach. He managed Cork City as well, but I'm not sure with Colin whether he wants to be front of house. You know, you are judged on press conferences, whether you like it or not. You are judged on your public appearances and your ability to not just rally the squad, but maybe rally the public sometimes as well, you know. So other names will come into it. Dave Connell at the moment, maybe even as an interim because he's involved with the 19s. And then there's been talk of the likes of Colin Bell, who previously managed the team. He's currently with the China under 20s. Hope Powell has been mentioned in dispatches as well. Ex-England, of course, and she was interviewed before Vera Powell got the job in 2019. But, you know, it's something, it reminds me of after the game, the defeat here, or rather in the Aviva Stadium, and Ruaidhrí Littlejohn's comments afterwards. I thought they were absolutely on point. You know, the way we went out to get back into the game was exciting. It was heart and mouth stuff, but it was really route one stuff in the end, you know. And you'd like to think that, you know, we need results, and that's the most important thing. But you'd also like to think that we can find a more expansive way of playing football and a less agricultural way. And that's something that goes all the way back down to the pyramid we've been talking about and back down to grassroots again.
Yeah, we looked a bit shell-shocked on the sideline. Rebecca, Tony's thrown a couple of names there. Matt Beard, the Liverpool manager, potentially another one. Do you have any you want to throw into the mix now before we wrap this all up?
He's named a few, all right. I was getting wind. A few names were thrown out there, all right. Carla Ward, another one who was also mentioned. She's itching to get back involved in the game, whether that's, you know, in the WSL or internationally. And, you know, obviously she's got a decent CV under her belt as well. So, yeah, look, who knows? It's going to be an interesting few weeks. Hopefully it will be quick enough, though.
Okay, Rebecca, thanks so much for being with us as always. Tony, likewise. Listen, if we get team news, we might talk to you before 7 o'clock, but enjoy the game otherwise. Thanks so much.
Take care.
Tony O'Donoghue, our soccer correspondent there, Rebecca Cray as well. 51552 for your text. We're going to chat rugby after the break.
Game on.
Rugby.
We're going to chat to Bernard Jackman and Michael Corcoran in a moment, but first, Tony O'Donoghue, that team news has arrived.
I just got a sneak preview of the Shamrock Rovers team for this evening, and it is Leon Poles in goal, and the back three will be Lee Grace, Pico Lopez and Dan Cleary. The wing backs will be Dara Burns and Josh Honahan. In the midfield, Gary O'Neill, Marcus Poom, Dylan Watts and Neil Ferrugia, with Johnny Kenny up front. So that's a strong team for Shamrock Rovers tonight, and hopefully that's the team that can get a result that gets even more money, more riches into Shamrock Rovers.
Tony, thanks indeed. Tony O'Donoghue, 8 o'clock kickoff there. Scoreless at halftime for Man United in the Europa League. They're away to Victoria Pilsen. As mentioned, rugby chat. Michael Corcoran and Bernard Jackman are with me in studio. Gentlemen, good evening to you both.
Damien, how are you?
Not too bad. Round two of the Investec Champions Cup. Bernard, there's a lot of chat over the last couple of weeks about where this competition is at, and like, there's no doubt it's lost a little bit of the glitz and glamour that it used to have until the knockout stages rolled around. Is it in need of fresh reinvigoration yet again?
Yeah, look, it has definitely slipped back, unfortunately. Look, we've been very lucky the last couple of years. The finals have been incredible, and some of the knockout games have been really good contests, but obviously the jeopardy's gone a little bit, and so easy to make the last 16 now. And when you see round one, teams rotating, teams resting players, and we give out about the English or the French, but like Ulster, to be fair, did rotate last week away to lose. And I understand Richie Murphy has to make a play strategically to try and get through the group, but also mind his players for the URC. But it's definitely has the way it's structured now, it's meant that we don't see as many top sides playing each other early in the competition, and that's a pity.
And this, like, obviously, Michael, the format, there's that disconnect between what impact one game has on another game and the various different opponents that you play. Like, this was all seen as a concession to the French and English teams, but it's hard to see that there's a willingness there to go back to the old traditional group stages, which might generate a little bit more excitement earlier on.
Yeah, I think most people don't actually understand the format of the competition. That's the problem. And if you compare and contrast the Champions League soccer with the Champions Cup rugby, they're both kind of the same, to be fair. And it gets interesting when we reach the knockout stage. That's the reality about it, I think. And Bernard is right. I mean, in terms of, I was talking to Paul Gustard after the match in Thomond Park last week, and we were talking about the URC versus the top 14, and him in terms of the team that they had sent over for that game, and he basically said, listen, we've 26 matches before we even reach the knockout stages in France, and then we have to try and fit in the Champions Cup as well. So it's lost its identity. I think it's lost its connection with the fans. That's the reality about it. You know, playing somebody home and away like Munster, Northampton, Leinster, Claremont, that kind of thing or whatever, they were always big hyped up games, really, to be fair about it. You know, as you approach Thomond Park, I don't know what your experience was like last week there, Bernard, but as you approached Thomond Park last Saturday, 2 hours, 2.5, 3 hours before the match, you didn't even know there was a match on.
And the crazy thing is, Munster was the home of European rugby. If there was ever a supporting base that got behind it, it was Thomond Park in the good and bad days. And to see them not come in their droves, you know, okay, there was a storm, etc. But it's just, I definitely over the last couple of years, even beyond last year at home, it isn't grabbing them emotionally like it did in the past. And I think the people at the top, obviously they changed the competition to appease the French and English, but the scenario for the English is a little bit different now. They have three clubs less than they had when they pushed through this model. They haven't got the sponsorship, they haven't got the TV rights that they thought they were going to get, and it does need a bit of a reshape or some fresh energy put into it, because it's in a phenomenal competition. And when it gets to the knockout stage, it's still phenomenal, but unfortunately the group stages have lost a little bit of their attraction.
Yeah, I wouldn't fancy being in that boardroom trying to get everyone on side. We look at the results of the weekend, obviously big wins for Leinster and Munster. You look at the Munster team, Michael, in advance of the game away to Cass tomorrow night, six changes, but you know, Mike Prendergast is bringing them locked and loaded, and obviously Munster are intent on trying to get their business done as early in this group stage as they can.
Yeah, it's a very, very strong team, and when you look, you know, Dave Kilcoyne and Ollie Yeager to come off the bench as well after a long period out with injury, it's a very, very strong Munster team, and they will feel that they have a good chance of doing well against Cast. However, this I think I'm correct in saying this is the most played fixture in European rugby, Munster against Cast. Cast take this very, very seriously, and there's a huge spikiness between the two clubs from the time that Rory Cockett was playing with them and before that even. Ismaila Lassisi with Peter Clausen, that's gone back a long time. There's a huge spikiness between the two of them. Throwing the fact that Abraham Papali'i, the former Connacht red card machine, is playing for Cast as well, and I think it's going to be there'll be a few wind up merchants on that pitch tomorrow night.
Credit to Neil Tracy, our colleague in online. Tomorrow's the 98th Champions Cup Cast have played. It'll be their 19th against Munster, which means Munster account for 19.3% of the teams they've played in European competition.
Yeah, and nearly all those games will be in the group stages. Cast tend not to qualify, and now Michael's right,
13 wins.
Yeah, they take their home games incredibly seriously, but there is an edge there, and they're not a bad side. Jeremy Davidson obviously at the helm there, he's finishing up at the end of summer, but the way Munster played last week, I think they'll go there with a lot of confidence.
I think so too.
Let's hear from Mike Prendergast. He's been chatting about the break the players got over the course of the Autumn Nations series and maybe the freshness that exists within the camp down in Limerick.
You can see there's a real freshness there. We had a nice break, which probably was needed. You know, we had a lot of injuries. We probably counted on a lot of the same players for a number of matches. That break did those players really, really good. We're obviously after Getting a few boys back over the last number of weeks, and we will over the next few weeks. And it just, I keep saying, it shares the load in terms of matches, training, etc., and it keeps that competitive edge. And you can see that in training, and I think that's coming out in the game, especially over the last 2 weeks. We look good and competitive. As I said, there's certain aspects that we need to get better. We're creating a lot of opportunities through line breaks, etc. And it's just about finishing a bit more than what we have, I suppose, taken on any given day. There's been, you know, we've left a few out there as well, which is always a positive sign as well. But it's still a work on.
Bernard, he's a man you know very, very well. Maybe in time, the upper echelons at Munster might come out and talk about the situation around the departure of Graeme Rowntree. But, you know, they've already made replacement in terms of a management team. They're ready to go. And they looked a team reborn last weekend.
Yeah, and I think it started with that game against New Zealand 15. You know, a lot of emotion, a lot of young players on the field, and there was a real good atmosphere there. Obviously they didn't win, but that I suppose then they got a break, then they beat the Lions, now they've beaten Stade, and they go to Cass. Michael mentioned getting likes of Kilcoyne and Jaeger back is massive, but also some stability. I think the Munster branch have done a good job. They quickly put Costlow in as interim. They recontracted Prendergast and Leamy. They got Alex Codling in short term. Sean Cronin is developing taking on more of a role with the scrum there. And they got Chris Boyd to come in from the Hurricanes as kind of one, an older experienced coach, just to make sure that the young coaches have someone there to mentor them. And I think Prendergast will get the job. I think in time he'll get the job, and maybe that will be Boyd's on recommendation, you know, of what he feels they need. And maybe Boyd will stay attached in a part-time way over the next couple of years to help the likes of Mike Prendergast come through. But certainly the opening month since post Rowntree, things look like they've turned around.
Do you both expect Munster 2-2 by the end of the weekend? Silence says it all. We don't need to expand on that anymore.
I wouldn't say it with a lot of confidence.
Okay,
I actually don't know. I think Castle will beat them.
Okay, Ulster, difficult weekend last weekend away to lose, which I don't think anyone wasn't expecting. Home to Bordeaux this weekend. You're going to be doing this for commentary on Radio 1. Equally formidable challenge, and you know, how do Ulster get a footing in this competition?
I would say that the prediction I make here, I'm not being a smart you know what, but I think they'll be better than they were last week, because they were woeful last week against Toulouse in really, really bad weather. Playing at home has been something of a comfort blanket for them over the last number of years. Richie Murphy is a good man. He's a really good man manager, and he's a really good coach. And I think they'll be a lot better, but the problem for them is that it's, you know, they're playing Bordeaux. And Bordeaux beaten in the top 14 final last year, so they're playing the top two teams in France in terms of last year in the competition, and it's a huge match for Ulster.
Again, it's about realism though as well, Bernard, isn't it, in terms of where Europe falls in your season, and like a realistic expectation on where you're at relative to God knows what Bordeaux team it will be that will arrive in Belfast, but you'd imagine it'll be locked and loaded.
It'll be locked and loaded. I know Jalibert, the 10's not coming, so that's a help, but I think they'll still be very strong. I think they'll get a massive reaction from Ulster, but it may not be enough. Like, I mean, when you put those two teams up side by side, regardless of who Bordeaux bring, their squad is much better. And I watched them last year come to Sports Ground, 4G pitch, and they tore Connacht apart. And I think that's the issue for Ulster, is it's not going to be as hostile as they maybe needed to be to that pitch with 4G. Bordeaux can play on it, and they have more pace and power and X factor than Ulster.
We look at Leinster. Bernard, comfortable win away to Bristol last weekend, at home to Claremont, which is live on RT television this weekend. Like, people talk a lot about Leinster's depth, and it's a factor around every game that we preview, but a lot of those players have an awful lot of rugby under their belt from November leading into Europe, so you'd wonder to what extent Leo Cullen will shuffle the deck this week.
Yeah, he may end up going very strong bench again, and stick with likes of Jack Boyle and rest Andrew Porter. He's so many options, with Conan being back fit, he doesn't need to overplay. Caelan Doris, Van der Fleer is it looks like he's the game time that he's getting is helping him, because his form has been outstanding. They can rotate and still win this game quite easily. Christophe Urios, the Claremont coach, was quoted yesterday saying he doesn't know how he should feel. He's got the fear of God, and also excitement to play Leinster. You know, he knows that this could get very messy for them. And Claremont, in fairness, are having a decent season in the top 14, but they're not the Claremont of old. So I think this will be pretty much run run the mill for Leinster, and Leo can take some risks, not massive risks, but you have a strong bench, and try and lessen the load on some of his players, because obviously he's got two Interpros to come as well over Christmas. So having so many Leinster players playing for Ireland just takes some managing at the moment,
and that's where the balancing act is going to come. You look at you know, the backbone of the Ireland team over the course of 2024, like so many of the Leinster players presumably might get a run out this weekend, and then they'll be put into cold storage until Simon Easterby heads to Portugal for a training camp.
Yeah, it's. I think it's, the selection is a bit of an interesting one. Obviously, they're down. They'll be down a few players. That's the reality about it. And Frawley missing after last week as well. But strangely, I met this wise man in wise person who shall remain nameless last Saturday after the match in a coffee place on the way back. And I said to him, he said, "What do you think about tomorrow?" And I said, "I think Bristol will give him a bit of a go." And he looked at me and he said, "Seriously?" And I said, "Yeah, I think so." So I was proven completely wrong. So I apologise to Bernard for that, because he was the fellow that I met. But I would say Claremont are good, but as Bernard said, they're not the Claremont of old. And I think Leinster can afford to mix and match and probably go strong again. There's a Jordy Barrett factor, and there's also the RG Snyman as well too. But I think this will be an opportunity for Leinster again to give somebody younger guns a bit of a start as well too.
The problem with all this is there's such an asterisk until it's now 1 o'clock. Why have they changed the teams from 12 o'clock to 1 o'clock? Is that some big strategic decision? No,
I've no idea.
So unusual, you know. I'm a middle-aged cranky man now.
All right, okay. I thought you were just cranky. Sits
on my phone at 12 o'clock going, where are the teams? Like the problem is there's such an asterisk beside all of this weekend until we see what hands
teams
various,
are. Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
Which again feeds back into your problem. Connacht, good win in against Ebre in the Challenge Cup last weekend. You'd have to wonder how big a motivator or a bigger priority is Europe for them this year, or is it all about getting yourself back into the top tier competition?
No, I think their plan and hope is to qualify for the Champions Cup through the URC. They made some changes last week, brought some more homegrown players through the pathway who got to play. But Zebra in the Challenge Cup was always going to be an easy game. And likewise, Perpignan are very much focused on top 14 survival. So they may get another win. They may end up in a quarterfinal, semi-final. But when it gets to that stage, this Challenge Cup will be hard won. And you'll have some very good top 14 teams in it who'll actually decide that they want silverware. We saw the Sharks last year win it. So I'd be careful, and I think Connacht would be careful about how much they target it, because the chance of winning is quite slim.
Okay,
and they have a match against Leinster the following week in the URC, so that's a huge one for them.
Before I let you go, Neil Doka appointed Irish under 20s head coach today, like by all accounts very highly regarded coach, and again it shows the use of that age grade. It's about developing more than players, it's about exposing people to, you know, that level of coaching expertise.
Yeah, and I mean, when we look at the Jack Crowleys or the Sam Prendergast coming through the last while, Brian Gleeson, obviously from Munster this weekend too. So the under 20s is a proper pathway now. It probably wasn't before, but now it's a proper pathway for people to go to the next level up. And I think, I mean, Neil Doak is very, very experienced, and I think he's a terrific coach following on from Noel McNamara and Richie Murphy previously, and has a good understanding with the players. Good to see Ian Keatley involved as well too, and Andrew Brown too.
They've actually, it's an area the IRFU have worked really well in terms of, even you mentioned Sean Cronin, the way they've managed to integrate recently retired players and players with professional experience back into the system. Like it's,
yeah, you look at throughout all the provinces. I mean, Willie Falloon as well is back in the system. I mentioned Sean Cronin, obviously Leinster have Sean O'Brien, Trevor Hogan, so there's lots of them there. But the interesting one with Neil Doak is incredibly experienced. The last two, Richie Murphy and Noel McNamara, have used the under 20s to bounce back into the pro game. Now Richie obviously was with the Irish national team, but as a head coach, Doak had been a head coach in his own right and then go back to the academy. So is this a pathway back for him into the pro game, or is he going to specialise in bringing through the next crop?
Okay, we'll wait and see how it plays out. Gentlemen, thank you both. Michael Corcoran, Bernard Jackman with us in studio. So coverage of the Ulster game on Saturday Sport on Radio 1 this weekend, and coverage of the Leinster game is on RT2 television. So much to come across the weekend. We are going to finish the programme, as we do on a Thursday, with only one man.
Game on.
Eye on America.
And we're going to go to the States. Shep, good evening.
Hey, Damien, how are you doing today, sir?
Sorry, I should tell people, 48 minutes played in Czechia, and it is Victoria Pilsen who've just taken the lead against Manchester United. So they lead by a 0-0, which shows that we are live for fear that people think we pre-record these things and edit out all our inane chatter.
Oh no, I make way too many mistakes for people to think that this is recorded.
Fair point. So. You and I both. Listen, we joke about America being the land of hope and opportunity, and it's given a great life to so many people from this island. It's nice to see you've elected a septuagenarian as your president to give him a second crack at the job. And we've now got a 72-year-old up-and-coming coach who's going to try and reignite his career in the college game.
Damien, I was just talking to Andrew O'Connor about this before we got on. This has not sunk into my brain yet. I just cannot comprehend the fact that Bill Belichick, six-time Super Bowl champion with your New England Patriots, is going to come back to coaching, and he's going to come back in college football, and he's going to the University of North Carolina. We are awaiting a press conference here shortly for the official announcement, but he's agreed to the deal. And I'm going to be wondering at some point, are the NFL GMs that are going to have openings this year and already have openings this year, are they sitting there in their offices going, what have I done? How did I let this guy get away? What's going to happen moving forward? It's stunning. There's not been anything like this in American college football really ever.
But listen, this is a guy who has had immense success. He himself and Brady personified the Patriots dynasty. And he was a guy that was deeply unhappy at how it all ended. So obviously at 72, I'm not going to say he's looking for a way to reinvent himself, but he's looking for a way presumably to prove I'm still relevant and I can bring home one hell of a paycheck along the way.
Look, his dad was a coach. He was born to be a coach. You know, he went to the Naval Academy. I mean, you know, he has great respect for institutions. He has great respect for leadership and for coaches. I mean, the guy was born to coach. I would think the last year or so of not being on the sidelines, not being in the room, not having the opportunity to lead young men has probably been gnawing at him. Mm. You know, he doesn't need to do this for the money. And yes, it's a butt ton of money. He doesn't need to do this for the glory because he's been to the pinnacle six times. You know, I just think it's that thing that is in great people and people who are born to be a thing. He was born to be a coach, you know, and I just, you know, the way it ended in New England, you know, there's been documentaries about it and there's been books written about it. It wasn't pretty. You know, he didn't go out the way he wanted to go out. And I think I think this is just an opportunity for him to rewrite the last chapter of his coaching life.
Yeah, it's his identity. In terms of, like, and again, it's a reminder of, I'm thinking of Jeff Benedict, who wrote a fantastic book about the Kraft family owning the Patriots. Right. And he wrote a book as well called The System, which was about college football. And for fear that you would think college football is amateur in ethos, I would encourage people to read that. To move to the NFL, which pales in insignificance for some people compared to the college game, are we going to get a marker for the Super Bowl this weekend?
Look, I think to me, you know, the Bills have been involved in two of the best games this season already. And the one that is going to happen this Sunday afternoon in Detroit is definitely a potential Super Bowl preview. You've got the 10-3 Buffalo Bills fresh off of a 44-42 loss in Los Angeles last week, where Josh Allen just went absolutely berserk, scored six total touchdowns. Going to go and visit the Detroit Lions, who have won 11 games in a row and are 12-1. And, it's like I said, it's their Detroit has got the inside spot for the one seed. Buffalo still has an outside chance there to be the one. They've already, you know, they beat the Chiefs, but, you know, they're looking at least to be the two or the three. And these are definitely preseason favorites. Jared Goff and the Lions have just been phenomenal. They're playing great offense. They have blown teams out. They've won the tight games. They have done it all. And again, Josh Allen just carried you know, the Bills last week with just an incredible superhuman performance.
I know people will say talking about money is the crassest thing that you can do, but the big story of the week, we had a, you know, I'm a big League of Ireland fan. We did a big transfer this week. Danny Grant released by my beloved Bohemians. He's gone across town to play for their arch rivals, Shamrock Rovers. He's not getting half as much money, I would imagine, as one Souza is getting to head from the New York Mets from the Yankees to the Mets, which is going to cause sporting civil war in New York.
The Big Apple was a fire this week for a wide variety of reasons, you know, socially and politically. But, you know, from a sports standpoint, yes, it was Juan Soto. He signs a 15-year, $765 million deal to go play right field for the New York Metropolitans. He spent last season with the Yankees. So, you know, again, you perfect illusion. You know, I mean, it's going to your crosstown rivals. I mean, not only do you pick up, you know, a great player, maybe one of the best in baseball, but, you know, you cause severe pain to your biggest rivals. So, I mean, it's all of that. Look, he's been in the major leagues already. He's only 26 years old. He's been in the major leagues since he was like 18 or 19 years old. He's already hit 200 home runs. He hit 40 last year. I mean, he is, again, I mean, if Shohei Ohtani was still playing in Japan, Juan Soto could, you know, be up for the argument for the best player in baseball. So, I mean, that's what the Mets have done. They have potentially transformed their franchise both on the field and off the field as well. And so it's just going to be fascinating to watch him.
You're going to have to sell some amount of jerseys down around Times Square, though, to make that deal equitable. Chef, listen, great to talk to you as always. I don't think you and I will talk this side of Christmas. So to you and the family, thanks so much for everything over 2024, and we'll chat all going well in the new year.
Thank you, Damien. Appreciate it.
Shep Shefford joining us from the States, bringing the programme to a conclusion. Betta is on the way after 7 o'clock. Jenny's here after 9. Dan is here after 11. From Damien O'Mara and all of us here till tomorrow night at 6. Good night.